Welcome, everyone, to Yada Yada Radio, to our Shabbat Torah study. Looks like I'm going to be your singular host for this evening, and that Larry is under the weather. I don't know where JP might be this evening, but we're definitely having technical issues with Blog Talk Radio. I have been disconnected once already. We may have them in the future. When I was disconnected, the chat room still worked, so maybe in big, bold, red letters, somebody can shout out to me that we have been disconnected, if that is the case. I received a letter. I think the letter may have come in yesterday, the day before, and I apologize to many of you. I have in the past, and that I don't typically respond to Yada Yada letters the day they come in. Now, sometimes I respond to them within seconds of the time they arrive, but it's really because I try to compartmentalize my life a bit. You know, there's the prep for the Shattering Myths show. There's doing the show. There's, you know, time to take care of other things in life, and then reading, studying, and writing and responding to emails is a big part of my life. But I don't like to just do it all day long, but prefer to concentrate it in periods of time. So sometime this week, I received an email from a fellow that sends me emails probably once every 2 or 3 weeks on average, sometimes less frequently than that. His name is Mike Bellotti. Mike's email today was one of the most enjoyable that I can ever remember receiving. And it's a small thing, two small things, really, that he mentions. I think they're both profound, but it's the approach that he took to Yah's word that I found so uplifting. So I want to share his email with you, and then I wish to shall share my response. And then, since this has to do with what we consume and how what we consume is designed to nurture us, I'm going to share a passage from Yeshayah that I read today in my study prep for continuing to share Yah's end times prophecies. So this begins. Hi, Yada. I've been thinking about Kara 11:9-12. Why are both fins and scales listed? All right, so he's beginning the way that I began the review of land mammals on what to consume and what not to consume. And, you know, found it interesting that Yah wanted us to consume that which has a separated foot and that which lifts up its food and devours it completely. In fact, the term Allah actually speaks of uplifting one's food. And so it became obvious to me that since no separated foot, even if it was a cud chewer, one of this was fixated on nutrition, that God didn't want us to eat it. And if it was a separated foot, but really didn't thoroughly devour its nutrition and get everything out of it, God didn't like that either. And so he was looking both for the separated foot and for the thorough consumption of what we eat, something, in fact, consuming it in an uplifting way. And so I came to the conclusion it had nothing to do with the animals that were listed. In fact, two of the animals don't even exist. They're at the very most that you could say about them is they're symbolic creatures, symbolic of camel being symbolic of Islam, the wild boar being symbolic of Babylon, and thus of Christianity, the giraffe being synonymous with the religion of the Egyptians and the arrogance and pride of the Egyptians. And so the hippopotamus was part of the African fertility myths in the animus religion. And so I found that edifying. So here's Mike. Now he's saying, okay, why are both fins and scales listed? Yeah, saying, you know, if it has fins but no scales, don't go there. If it has scales but no fins, don't go there either. It's presented exactly the same way as the uplifting digestion of every morsel and the divided foot, which is walking in a way that separates you from the herd, from other animals, so you can be set apart unto Yah in his covenant. So he is trying to figure out, okay, so what's the story with fins and scales? He writes, there are no fish that have scales but no fins, save one. Actually, there's no fish that have scales and no fins. There's one fish that has fins but no scales, but there is no fish that has scales but no fins. But snakes have scales, but they don't have any fins, even though they can live in rivers and in lakes. There's some snakes that even live in the ocean. And there are fish that have fins but no scales, such as a catfish, bottom dweller. And, of course, things like clams, shrimp, mussels, etc., have neither fins nor scales. Hello, JB. Good to have you with us.
How's it going?
Good. I am getting nowhere, he says.
My brother was lost. I'm talking with him.
Okay. I am getting nowhere, he said, looking into the etymology of fins, and I can't find the root word for fins and Strong's. So I started thinking about the function of fins. He writes, fins guide and propel fish forward. Forward direction is relative, but a fish can only swim forward. There is no reverse gear on a fish, just like airplanes. Airplanes have fins. They have airfoils. They only work when the plane is going forward. Look at the etymology of scale. It's whether it be in any one of the two leading lexicons. Now, it's useless, so I'm now pretty much convinced that the word actually means truth or truth squared, absolutely verifiable truth. I think the root words are truth and verification. I don't think that it's a coincidence that the English word scale can either mean the scales of a fish or a scale, which is the device used to measure true weights of an object to determine its value. And I just had a revelation about snakes. They have scales, truth, but no fins, direction. You know, it's interesting that Ha-Satan knows the truth. Every serpent knows the truth. Every serpent knows Yahweh. They're all fallen Moloch. Just to work for him. Everyone knows the truth. But they are directionless, as it is. None of them that are moving in the right direction. It's a perfect depiction of a serpent. So they have truth, but no guidance moving forward. Satan is represented by a snake. Satan had the Torah to start with, but decided to reject it. He had Yahweh, but rejected him. Also, the Israelites had the Torah to start with, but many of them decided to reject it or ignore it. Now, it was good to have fins, which are guidance moving forward, and scales, the truth. You move forward based on the truth. So if you were moving forward and had guidance and found the truth, you were accepted. That's good. Or if you had scales, truth, to start, but you were moving forward in your life with guidance, that true works just as well. It doesn't matter if the guidance came first or the truth, and the truth came second or the other way around. If people had fins, guidance moving forward, and were seeking the truth, then that works as well. The majority of people, however, don't have fins or scales. They don't move forward in the right direction, and they don't know the truth. They aren't even interested in the truth. Have you ever looked at the etymology of fins and scales? What do you think about this? My response is as follows. It's exactly why Yah shared these words in this way. He wants us to consume things that will move us forward purposefully in the right direction. You know, fins don't work on their own either. I mean, the fish has to use them. When they use them, it moves forward purposely. Yah wanted us to consume the truth. The truth is nurturing. It's helpful. It's beneficial. It helps us grow. So I wouldn't be surprised, Mike, if all of this was put there for the sole purpose of Yah knowing that one day you'd figure this out and you'd share it with us. I think it's exciting. It's useful. It's guidance. It's all part of the joy of discovery. You know, honestly, when I get this kind of a letter, I'm vastly more excited when someone has figured it out other than me. You know, I feel like perhaps with our discussion on the land mammals, that I might have started you off in the right direction, at least with the right perspective, but you went way beyond the point where I had left off. And this is the way Yah envisions us living together in eternity as part of his covenant family. My hope has always been that one day, those that I may have played a role in pointing in the right direction by sharing Yahweh's word would greatly surpass me in understanding it. This is a giant leap in that regard. It's a happy day. Now I want to share something that that I read about an hour after that email, maybe less. I've shared with you all before that I've been spending a lot of time trying to get a word's eye view of the turf moving forward, because Yah doesn't tell us what's going to happen in chronological order, all in one book, all at one time. He tells us bits and pieces, and you've got to put it all together. And I'm in the midst of completing my second chapter on Rome. For those who have noticed in the book Yada Yah at yadayah.com, the seventh volume is now up. And there are three chapters of the seventh volume that are now published. There's one that I have written that is not yet published, and I'm in the midst of trying to complete my review of Rome. The point that I'm trying to make is that both Greece and Rome made Christianity possible. And I'm endeavoring to show how if it were not for Greece and Rome, Christianity would have been impossible. Paul would have failed. And so that's the thing that I'm in the midst of, but I'm also at the same time trying to get this word's eye view of eternity. And I want to tell you, there's something that struck me, and I shared it on the Shattering Myths today, about both Yirmiyah and Yashayah. In both prophetic testimonies, Yahweh is saying the same thing over and over and over and over again, which is that I chose you. I offered you my covenant. Everything that I have worthwhile, I offered to give to you. I wanted to be your father. You rejected me. You ignored me. You created gods after your own image and started worshiping them. Bad things have happened to you because of what you have done. I became very angry with you. But my anger is not going to last forever because, quite frankly, it would diminish me if I let it. So I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to reconcile my relationship with you. I'm going to turn the entire earth back into the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. I'm going to honor my covenant. So my advice to you is to pay attention to what I have written, to listen to what I have said, to focus on the covenant, to capitalize on everything that I am offering you as part of my family. That's all he says. And the entire book of Yirmiyah and Yashayah is written to convey that, and it's over and over and over again. He said, yeah. Let me remind you, I happen to be God. I created the universe. I chose you. I offered you my covenant. And yet you rejected me. And although I'm angry with you, I have chosen not to reject you. Here's what's going to happen in the short term, and here's what's going to happen in the end of days. And he just lays it all out. I want to tell you, it's hard for me to read. How would you like to be God and have done these things only to be rejected? It's really sad. Now, there is something in both Yirmiyah and Yashayah that I think speaks to us. Yah constantly tells us that in the last days, there are going to be those who get it. There are going to be those who prioritize his name, his word, who are going to come to understand, who love his means to resolve disputes, who love his covenant, and their words are going to be restoring. And he's constantly encouraging us to take part in this great mission. And he is saying over and over again as well, don't hold back. Give them both barrels. My people have rebelled against me. Tell them. Be blunt. Be bold. Warn people. And after you've warned them, after you've shown how they have rebelled against me, then share the truth. Tell them I love them. Tell them about the covenant. Tell them that I have invited them into my family. As I was reading today, it sounded kind of like the whole recap of the Shattering Mish program. You know, we're at a terrible time. There is no hope in any human institution. The whole world is coming to a crashing close. You have very little time. In fact, in the passages I was reading, when I was reading from about Yashayah 45 through about 59 today, Yah pleads with his people, says, now, don't wait any longer. The opportunity for you to turn around, to reject your ways, to accept my ways, it's nigh. You don't have much time left. Change now. Listen now. Respond now. Now, what I wanted to share with you is from Yashayah 55. I'm just going to share it with you in the New American Standard because I haven't. But the purpose of this, my afternoon study, isn't to translate everything. I'd like to do that one day, but it's just to understand, you know, I think most of us now have gotten to the point you can read a standard Bible translation and you can replace all of the words that they have conveyed errantly because you know their habits. This is what Yah says to us. And he's speaking of to his children. Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. Whose waters? Yah's living waters. If you're thirsty, Yah is offering you water. That was a big part of the whole Exodus experience. They were thirsty. Yah provided water. And you who have no money, come and eat. Yeah, God's not charging us anything for this. But just as he wants us to come, if you're thirsty, and drink his living waters, says it doesn't. If you have no money, come on, eat, consume what I'm offering. Come, acquire wine and milk. Come, acquire wine and milk. But why wine and milk? What do you think, James? Why wine and milk?
Well, the wine I would see to pass over.
Yep. Wine is about life. It is about the doorway to God's family. Yeah. So wine's pretty important. And the other is milk. Milk is what mothers provide to their babies, because when we begin our relationship in Yahweh's family, we are babies that need milk to grow. And his words are milk that nourishes us. You know, it's interesting, too, that one of the reasons that medical doctors have recognized that mother's milk is vastly better than formula is that in a mother's milk are natural antibodies that help a child fight off infections. Yah's words are antibodies. They help us fight off the deadly plagues of human lives. Why do you spend money for what is not bread? God asks, why do you spend money for not what is not bread? Now, he's just said, if you have no money, come, drink. If you have no money, come, eat. You know, he says, I'll give you wine and milk. And then he says to us, but why? Tell me, why are you spending your money for that which is not bread, which is not nourishing? How many bookstores are there, Christian bookstores? How many fabulously rich Christian authors are there? How many people are willing to sell you a book that is just going to deceive you?
The majority of the world.
Absolutely. You know, God is asking, why are you spending, when I'm offering you the freely, the most nourishing, the most regenerative and restoring drink and food in the world, free, why in the world are you paying for that which isn't nourishing?
Yeah.
No, it reminds me of Yosha's statement, where he said, "I have come in my Father's name, and yet you reject me, and yet one will come in his own name, and him you will receive." And you know, Paul was all about dig deep. You know, pay those who are serving you. You know, give your
the
money
double portion
to
for the
right. Right. So they coughed up money for Paul, and yet with Yosha, no. So that's what he's saying there. It's we have this tendency to pay, you know, look at all the religious institutions and all their buildings. That just comes from people paying them. Why do you spend money for that which is not bread? And your wages for that which does not satisfy? I mean, look at all the places that we spend our money thinking that's going to bring us joy. And God has said, no, freely I'm going to give you that which is satisfying. Freely I'm going to offer you that which is nurturing, which is nourishing, which is restoring. I'm offering it all to you for free. Come, here it is. And yet you spend your money for things that don't satisfy. Ah, now listen to this. This is why I'm sharing this. Listen carefully to me, and eat what is good. How do you eat what is good? By being kosher? By never eating a ham sandwich? By never eating camel? By avoiding the old sea roach? Or is God saying, you want to eat that which is good. If you want to consume that which is really nurturing for you, nourishing for you, listen to me. He's equating his word, his testimony, with that which is nurturing. He's equating man's religious and political and entertainment, toys and poisons, that we spend our money on is that which is not satisfying. It's as clear as words allow. I'm telling you that what he wants us to eat is that which comes from him, his word. Consume his words, and you will be nourished. Listen carefully to me and eat what is good. And delight yourself in abundance. If you consume what God is offering, you're going to have an abundant reward. You're going to find yourself satisfied abundantly. You know, Yahushua said, I didn't come just to bring you life, but to bring life abundantly. If you're nourished on Yah's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, you will find delightful abundance. In this context of listening to Yahweh so that you consume that which is good, he says, incline your ear and come to me. How can you make anything out of that statement in this context other than if you listen to God, if you incline your ear to him, which means that, you know, you're leaning towards him to make sure you hear even the subtle tones, that you can hear even the whispers, you can hear him even if he's not shouting, that you're leaning towards him because you'll want to hear what he has to say. You're actively engaged in the process. If you do that, what's the result? 100% of those who make an effort to listen to what Yah has to say, approach him. Listen to Yah, and you will come near. You will be in his presence. It really is as simple as that. Listen to what he has to say, and that will bring you into his presence. What is the thing that we're constantly saying now? The difference between those who are religious and those who are engaged in the relationship. Are you willing to go where the words lead? Where do the words found in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms lead? To Yahweh, to his home.
Right, to Yahweh.
To the covenant, right? Powerful.
Yeah.
Incline your ear and come to me. Listen that you may live. I mean, I don't know how he could be any more blunt. Did he say pray so you can live? Did he say dig deep and donate so you can live? Did he say believe so you can live? Did he say join a church so you could live? Join a synagogue so you can live? Listen.
Didn't hear any mention of grace.
No. Listen so you can live. Listen to who? Listen to Yahweh. What are we doing when we read Yahweh speak in first person through Yashaya? We're listening to Yahweh.
Listening to him.
What's the result? We live. Now, we don't just live in the sense of, and I'm here to tell you, I really enjoy life. I don't want to live forever like this. I really don't. I'm delighted to live forever with him. And so this idea of listen, incline your ear, and arrive in Yahweh's presence, listen, and you will live, that kind of listening is now eternal life in Yahweh's presence. That's very appealing. Listen and you may live. And I will make an everlasting covenant with you. Okay? Come near. Okay, listen. Come near. Listen, live forever. And what is the mechanism that facilitates those? The everlasting covenant. If you listen, you'll come near. If you listen, you'll live forever. If you listen, then you will be part of Yahweh's eternal family. That's what everlasting covenant. You will be part of his eternal family. And I will establish an everlasting family relationship with you according to the faithful mercies shown to Dod, according to the steadfast and dependable mercy shown to Dod. Now, why in the world does Dod end up here when we're trying to listen to Yahweh? Why do you think He's talking about listen and live, listen and be nourished, listen and approach Yahweh, come near, listen and you will be part of the eternal family of Yahweh. And now he's saying, listen and you will experience dependable mercy. The same kind of dependable mercy that was shown to Dode. Why interject Dode here? What do you think, JB?
Trying to point us in the right direction.
Well,
if you want them to know God, look at Dode as a great example.
Yep. I think there's two reasons Dode was listed here. One is Dode needed mercy because his behavior was abysmal. And so God is saying, if I have chosen a guy that I'm going to demonstrate my mercy, my steadfast love to, who was deeply flawed into his behavior, you know, maybe that'll be good enough for you too. What do you think? Do you, JB, have you ever had a guy killed so that you could have sex with his wife?
No, never done that.
No. And so you would be, from a behavior point of view, because that really did tick God off, you would need less mercy from this perspective than Dode did, right? So if Yah's mercy was sufficient to take care of Dode, it's sufficient to take care of you, isn't it?
Different property, right?
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's saying, you know, I am telling you, I don't care what you've done. I don't care what you've eaten. I don't care where you've slept. If you listen to me, if you are nourished by my words, then I'm going to be merciful. I'm going to take care of you. If you go where the words lead, you'll find me. You'll be in my presence. You'll be part of my family, and I'm going to take care of you. That's what he's telling us. Now, he did, by saying, according to Dode, you're right. I gave half of it. You gave half of it. You know, Dode was not accepted into the covenant family by Yahweh because he was a bad boy. He was accepted in Yahweh's family in spite of the fact that he was a bad boy. He was accepted into Yah's family because he listened to Yah. He went where the words led. He was the perfect example of listening to what Yahweh has to say, thinking about it, and responding. That's what makes Dode special. So if you want the mercy in accordance with the way that it was given to Dode, stop worrying about your behavior. Stop worrying about a do this or a do that, or a don't do this or a don't do that. All you should be concerned about is what Dode was concerned about. What did Yahweh say? What does it mean? What's the consequence? That's it.
That's all that matters.
I want to tell you. Then this, listen to this, this next statement. You just spoke about Dode, right? Behold, I have made him a witness to the family, a leader for the people. Do you know, this was written around 750 BCE. When did Dode live?
You got me on that one. I don't know the timeline too well.
Dode was toes up, pushing up daisies, right around 960-ish, 970-ish BCE. 250 years ago, Dode was dead. And Yahweh is saying that I have made him a witness to the family. I've made him a leader for the family. How is that possible? How has he made Dod a witness? The guy was dead. How did he make God a leader?
They're the writings he inspired.
Absolutely. The Psalms. He has used Dod to be a witness to us. That if you listen to what Yahweh has to say, thoughtfully, if you do what Mike did with fins and scales, and you process the information, and you think about it, and you really ponder, what could this mean to me in terms of guidance and truth, direction, moving forward? That if you do that, if you really listen, if you incline your ear, if you're desirous of knowing what God has to say, and you focus on reading and listening to his testimony, then what you're going to find is that Dod is a witness. Yeah, sure, Moshe is a witness. Sure, Yashaya is a witness. And they are powerful witnesses. But there's a difference between Moshe and Yirmiyah and Yashaya. You know what the difference is? Think of the difference in the style of the writing between Dod's Psalms and the text of the Torah, the text of Yirmiyah and Yashaya. You know what the fundamental difference is?
They're not written from a first-person perspective?
There you go. Dod's Psalms, well, they do interject a lot of first-person from Yahweh. For the most part, Dod's Psalms are Yah's testimony processed through this man's mind. With Yashaya and Yirmiyah, Yah is saying, write this down. Constantly write it down. I'm telling you what I want you to write down. With most of what Dod writes in the Psalms, he has considered what Yahweh has said, and he's processed it, and now he's sharing with us. After he has processed it, after he's come to understand it, after he's come to embrace it, after he's, you know, taken it to heart, he's celebrating it with us. Dod then lives as the witness as to exactly how we can come to celebrate our relationship with Yah, how we can come to know him, how we can come to understand him, how we can focus on what's important. That's how Dod is a unique witness, unlike any of the other. And how is he a leader? Because his testimony leads us to Yahweh. It leads us to the covenant in its terms and conditions. It leads us to the Torah. It leads us to the means that Yahweh has established to render us perfect. That's how he's leading us. He's leading by example, not an example of behavior. All of these people that are fixated on, you can't do this, you can't do that, you have to obey, nonsense. Dod was the worst in the world at that, and yet he is the example that we're to follow. He's the leader. He's a witness. Because it's not his behavior that was meaningless. Yah didn't like it when he had his general killed to diddle his wife. Now, I'm going to tell you, made God really mad. But it didn't change his love for his son, Dod. Dod's the example. That's how we are. God is telling us that's how we should view his testimony, think about his testimony, understand his testimony. It's powerful stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
It's here's another thing that I want to share with you. This is from the next chapter of Yashaya. For thus says Yahweh, to those who keep my Shabbat. Those who observe, I shouldn't say keep, those who observe my Shabbat. Those who choose that which pleases me. Okay, now he's making a statement here, and he's saying that, I'm saying this to those who observe my promise of seven, my Shabbat. That means that you focus on, you examine, you consider Yah's promise, his oath of seven, the Shabbat. And those who choose of your own free will that which pleases me. Now, I'm reading this as Yah dictated because he's speaking here in first person, and therefore me is Yahweh. We're reading his testimony, that which pleases Yahweh. Okay, JB, you only get one chance on this one. What is the thing that pleases Yahweh the most?
Observing the Torah?
Nope. He likes that. That's one of the things that he asks us to do repetitively. Observe the Torah. Listen to him. Nope. The thing that pleases him the most is the children and his family. The covenant.
Yeah.
The covenant.
Yeah.
Now, I want to tell you, you're close. You can't participate in the Torah.
You can't get one without the other.
That's right. There's only one place that you can engage in the covenant, and that's by going where the words of the Torah lead. You got to follow the Torah's guidance.
But in fact, it is possible to observe the Torah and not be part of Yah's family if you choose. So
right, right.
Being part of his family.
Yeah, I do not think it's possible to be part of Yah's Torah covenant family without observing the Torah, though. So it is a requirement. You have to observe the Torah to become part of Yah's family. But the Torah exists singularly to encourage us to be part of his family. I mean, that's the only reason the Torah was written, is to invite us and encourage us to become part of his family. So, those who choose that which pleases me, and this is the reason I didn't read this next statement, because it answers the question, and who cling to, who hold fast to my covenant. You want to choose what pleases Yahweh, then grasp hold of the covenant. For them, I will give my house. I'm going to give them my house, my home. This is as clear as words allow on what God wants, what he desires, and what he's offering. If you choose that which pleases me, then you will hold fast to my covenant. And those who do, I will give them my home, my walls to remember. And I will give them a name better than that of the names of any son or daughter. And I will give them an everlasting name from which they will never be cut off or separated. If you focus on what Yahweh wants, you will cling to covenant. And he will, in turn, invite you into his home and give you his name. So, and by the way, that's not in the Torah. It's in Yahshayah. It's in Isaiah. Even in Isaiah, talking about the last days, it's all God's focused on. My covenant. I'm inviting you to participate in my covenant. I made this offer. I'm holding true to this offer. I want you to walk away from the world and walk to me. Good stuff. Boy, and there are prophetic statements in Yahshayah. You know, there's things that I've learned are going to happen based upon what's there. But that's not why it was written. It wasn't written to tell us the future. It was written to tell us God's heart, to expose God's heart to us. Yahweh lays his heart right on the dotted line throughout Yashayah. Do you know that I've been in this position before? It's kind of embarrassing, but I've been here. When back in high school and early in college, there was a girl that I just was crazy about. I wanted the worst way for her to be my girlfriend. I did go out with her on a number of dates, but and I think she liked me. She respected me. We had some good times, but she was never anywhere close to being my girlfriend. And a couple of times I made the mistake of just laying it all out and telling her how I felt about her. Man, I want to tell you, there's nothing more vulnerable than doing that before someone that doesn't think the same way of you that you think of them. Unrequited love. Now, did I really love her? No, I didn't know her well enough. But nonetheless, that experience pains me to this day. Not that she didn't respond, that I made myself so vulnerable in that way. Mm-hmm. Painful. What do you think the entire book of Yashayah is? He chose Yisrael. He chose Jacob. And Yisrael and Jacob, no matter how much God told them, I love you, I want you to be my friend, I want to spend my life with you, I want to devote myself to you because I love you. And Jacob and Yisrael responded the same way that girl did to me and back in high school. As a matter of fact, she was actually very nice about it. She wrote me lovely notes about it. She was very kind, far more mature than I was. And yet it still stung. What about God, who now knows that most of his children are off being religious, spitting in his eye? Man, it's got to hurt. I mean, it just tells you the depth of Yah's love. It, throughout this, as I shared one line with you that was just amazing to me. Yah says, you know, I was angry with you for a short while. A short while for Yah might be 3,000 years. But I couldn't continue to be angry, even though you deserved it, because it would have consumed me. It would have made me less. Amazing. I mean, Yahweh is exactly as we would want him to be. He's open, out there pleading with us. You know, almost begging us to become part of his family. Reaching out to us. I'm here. I love you. I want to care for you. I want to protect you. I want to enrich your lives. I want to spend my life with you. And most of us want nothing to do with them. And the vast majority of people go so far as to not only reject him, but cling to, sacrifice their lives, worshiping, bowing down in prayer, spending their money with all manner of false gods. But the real one is rejected. I mean, it's as the world is falling apart, we have a very limited amount of time to let people know there really is a God. His name is Yahweh. He wants to offer us the opportunity to be adopted into his family. It is no more complicated than that. He wants us to listen to him and to go where the words lead. It's a marvelous story. It's a wonderful offer. All right, with that introduction, and I've taken now half of the program just to bring you up to speed, but I thought that it was worth doing. let's return to the witness of doubt. The 97th verse, we've been here before, we'll go through it quickly. Oh, what to what a degree? How much ma? It's a M word. It's part of the ma group of statements, eight statements beginning with ma. Oh, how ma? To such a degree. I love, I adore, I desire your Torah. How is Dode a witness? Why did Dode receive Yah's mercy? Oh, how I love your Torah. And that's really it, folks. Oh, how I love your Torah. All day, this day, and every day, she provides me with the information I need to respond properly. We should all have that on our foreheads. We should put that on billboards. We should have that on bumper stickers. She continually, this is still speaking of the Torah, she continually causes me to be prudent. She teaches and instructs me, enables me to be circumspect and discerning. Teaching instructs. Teaching enables us to be prudent, discerning. Well, that's the whole purpose. Torah equals teaching. Teaching equals understanding. That glue, that catalyst between knowing and understanding is connections. If you love the Torah, you'll make connections with the words. You'll do what Mike did. You'll make connections. That connections will lead to understanding. The understanding will lead to joy. You'll go where the words lead. They will lead directly to Yahweh, to life eternal, to being nourished, to being restored, to being in his home, to bearing his name. The Torah causes me to be prudent, to be circumspect, to be discerning, concerning staying away from the adversary and from those things which are hostile to me. It's the antidote. The terms and conditions of your covenant contract are forever before me. That's the part of the Torah that's the most important for us to understand. The terms and conditions of the covenant contract. It's five of them. From all of my understanding and training, I have gained insight and understanding because your eternal testimony serves as my source, providing the information I need to think properly and to respond appropriately. Yahweh, 250 years after Dode penned these words, said that Dode would lead us in the right direction, that Dode was an example of his mercy, that Dode was a witness for us. And here's Dode saying, yeah, it's your Torah. Causes me to be able to think, to be discerning, to exercise good judgment. It's the thing, it's the source of training that I need so that I have insight and understanding. Because your eternal testimony, your eduth, your enduring witness serves as my source, providing me the information I need to respond. You know, we say this over and over again. God did not make it difficult. He's told us how to observe his Torah. He's told us what his Torah represents. He's told us that the Torah exists for the purpose of the covenant, that the covenant is everlasting, that it's a family-oriented relationship, that if you embrace the Torah, if you cling to the covenant, then you're going to live forever. You're going to bear his name. You're going to be his child. You're going to be invited into his home. It's a marvelous offer. It's a great story. It's reliable. And by the way, you know, eternal testimony, instruction, the ability to be prudent, the source of teaching, none of that is the stuff of faith. None of it. God wants to be known, not believed. God wants to be trusted, which requires us to use our minds. He gave us eyes to read, ears to hear, minds to process what we see and what we hear, hearts and souls to be able to respond and embrace that which we've come to know and understand. We have all the information necessary to come to know who Yahweh is, and He is wonderful, unassuming, approachable, kind, supportive, fun to be around, enlightening, brilliant. And all of this is just so that we can process what He has said about Himself and about what He's offering and about His family, so that we can enter His home, live with Him forever. Dode then writes, even more than the leaders, the chiefs, and the authorities who have been prominent, I have consistently developed the skill to understand. Because I have actually and completely observed your precepts, those instructions that you have entrusted to us, to pay especially close attention for guidance so that we can respond appropriately to you. Dode's not bragging here. This is not bragging. He's telling us the truth. Of all of the men who have ever lived, of all of the kings, of all of the wise men, of all of the philosophers, no one in all of human history developed more keenly the skill to understand than this fellow Dode. We're given a word's eye view into the most beautiful mind that ever existed. And James, you know what word he used for understand? The skill to understand?
Yada?
Nope, that's the word for knowing in a relational sense. The word in Hebrew for understand, the skill to understand, is bien. It means to make connections between things. Dode made the connections. Covenant, family. Yahweh, Father. Teaching, understanding. Guidance, responding. He made the connections. He made the connections better than anyone in human history has made the connections. He came to understand. He is sharing with us not only what he came to understand, but something vastly more valuable. I can share with you all what I've come to understand about what each of the seven invitations to meet with God and what they represent. I can share with you that I understand that Passover is the doorway to God's house. I can tell you that, share with you the understanding that the reason the first four Moed Mikre have already been fulfilled is that those first four Moed Mikre provide the five benefits of the covenant. I can share that understanding with you because I've made those connections. But that's not nearly as valuable to you or to anyone than what Dode is doing here. What Dode is doing here is sharing with us how we individually can come to know and understand. He's sharing with us the process, which is vastly more appealing. What he's doing is giving us the right perspective, the right focus, so that we can do what Mike did earlier this week. Think it through, make the connections, come to understand. That's why Dode is not just a witness, he's a leader. He's leading us through the process. You know, lots of times people will write and say, well, you know, can't you just summarize this thing? I mean, your books, for crying out loud, are hard to read. They're a slow read, and they're thousands of pages long. I don't have that much time. Why don't you just come up with a 50-word or 25-word or not 50-word, but 50-page or 25-page summation of this? Just tell me what I really need to know. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Yahweh didn't do that. If Yahweh didn't do it, what makes you think that I should? Didn't.
Because if you have that, okay, I got a checklist of what I need to do. Do you know God? No. Do you want to spend your life with him? Really, the only reason anyone would is because they're afraid of hell. I actually had this exact conversation with him. Like, you know, why didn't God just make it easy to know him and give me, you know, tell me do this to get him to hell? Like, because he doesn't want you there if that's what you want.
Right.
He wants someone who's going to spend the time, invest the time in the relationship, come to know him.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and who like this whole
of time
process
on human
of understanding.
Relationships, but no time with God.
Correct. You know, eternity is all going to be about a voyage of discovery. That's the way we're going to grow. That's what we're going to share. That's what the relationship is going to be based upon. If you don't like that,
how boring would it be if it was anything else?
Right. And if you don't like that, you're going to be a burden on the rest of us. You know, you're going to be the person that, oh, God, he's sitting in the back of the bus again, you know, looking up into space. He doesn't want to be here with us. The rest of us are singing songs. The rest of us are commenting on what we're seeing before our eyes. We're sharing. We're uplifting one another. You got that load in the back who wishes he was someplace else. No, that's why it is this way. Why Toad is such a great leader. Why such a great witness. Oh, it's he's not. The 119th Psalm isn't the five lines. It's 176. And it's not the one and only Psalm. It's 119th Psalm. It's a lot to say. It's a lot to share. It's a lot to think about. You know, I began this program by saying that I'm spending a lot of time reading the prophets. I read Yirmiyah from beginning to end, and just, not just reading it. I'm writing notes. I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to understand the whole thing. And now I'm within a few hours of finishing Yashayah. And I'm going to go on to Ezekiel, and I'm going to go on to Zechariah and Malachi. And you know, the goal is to see if I can somehow make connections and bring it all together in such a way that this marvelous tapestry of our future unfolds. I mean, that was the goal. I'm not sure that's where I'm going to end up. In fact, where I am right now, that's not where I'm going to end up. Because that wasn't the goal of Yirmiyah or Yashayah. If it's not Yahweh's goal, why should it be mine? The goal of Yashayah, of Yirmiyah, is of Yahweh calling us home, telling us you're going in the wrong direction. You're walking away from me, not to me. Everything that man is telling you is wrong. I've provided you with guidance. I've chosen you. I love you. I want you to be part of my family. Please, turn around. Change direction. Please. Embrace the covenant. Come into my home. I want to do all of these marvelous things for you. That's the purpose of Yashayah. It's not to tell us the future. Yeah, sure, the future is woven into it because, you know, God wants us to understand everything from beginning to the end of time. But, you know, that's really the purpose. And there's no way to shortcut this. You know, it's this story was told over a long period of time. Do you know that in Yashayah, Yah is constantly referring to Eden and to the conditions experienced there? He turns right back the clock and talks about Noah and why he responded to humankind that way and says, you know, you've returned right back to those same conditions. You know, he talked about Eden being joyful and the relationship he had with Adam and wanting that again and going to bring that back to the whole earth. And he says, you know, I had to wipe out mankind with the flood with Noah. And gosh, I don't want to do that again. But yet you've gone right back to those same conditions.
Or you can let us do it ourselves.
Yeah. And then he goes to Abraham, calls Abraham my friend. And he says, listen, I established this covenant with him. You really, I mean, I'm going to give you some advice here, God said. Focus on Abraham and Sarah. Think about what Abraham and Sarah represent vis-a-vis my covenant. I mean, he's going through in Yashayah the whole history of time. From beginning to end, to his return, to the whole tapestry of time is there. With the covenant in the center of it. With Yahweh standing there in the center of it and laying his heart open in these words. I love you. I've done this all for you. All I want is for you to come to know me. I want you to want to spend time with me just as I want to spend my life with you. Let me nourish you. Let me lift you up. Let me enlighten you. Let me empower you. Let me perfect you. That's what I want to do. Will you let me love you? That's what the book of Yashayah is all about. Nothing else in it other than that story. So Dode is telling us, and by the way, of course, Yashayah goes from Abraham to Dode. Dode is the witness. Dode is the leader. Even more than the leaders, the chief, the authorities, who have been prominent throughout time, I have consistently developed the skill to understand. Bien. I have examined the evidence and made the necessary connections. Because I have actually and completely observed your precepts, those instructions which you have entrusted to us that help us to respond to you. There are times when you just think about what we have just been told and you say, why isn't the covenant family millions, if not billions, strong? I mean, these are really simple, clear instructions. There's no misunderstanding any of this. All been there for us. And yeah, it even says in Yashayah, he says, you know, it's not like I gave my revelation in secret. You know, it's not like I didn't lay it all on the line for you. It's not like I didn't commit it to writing for you. It's not like I haven't been there all the time for you. From every evil way, my feet and steps are actually restrained and totally refuse to go, so that I constantly, continually, and literally observe your word. Whoa, Nelly. How is that possible? How is it possible that Dode's feet were restrained from every evil way if he was an adulterer? How's that possible, James?
That makes no sense if you're looking at physical.
Well, you know, what I think God is saying here is what Dode is telling us, what Yahweh is telling us through Dode, is that our behavior, us looking at the pretty girl in the bikini when I walk on the beach with my dog, and when I'm a married fella, our glances, it's irrelevant. Just irrelevant. Now, you know, God had a conniption fit when Dode committed adultery with his general's wife and had him killed for that. Now, so I mean, I'm not going to demean, you know, that, and by the way, I don't walk down the beach at not committing adultery, you know, but I'll look at the pretty girls. That's not my way. A way that of evil has nothing to do with choosing to have a ham sandwich. It's not an evil way. An evil way is the religious way. It's the political way. It's man's way. It's the way of the military. That's an evil way. Doe didn't ever engage in the evil way. You know, even when he killed Goliath with the sling, he wasn't really part of the army. The army didn't want him. He was too young, too wet behind the ears. He wasn't leading the army. He wasn't part of the army. He just says, all right, I'll take care of this. Yeah, Dode was king, but where was he king? Israel and Jerusalem. Yahweh's kingdom, not man's kingdom. Dode did bad stuff, but he never engaged in evil. Evil is speaking on behalf of astrology. Evil is speaking of man's alliances and treaties providing you comfort, salvation. That's evil. Doe didn't go there. His steps always restrained, refused to go in that direction. And that was the case because he constantly and carefully observed Yahweh's word. And at the time that Doe lived, could he do what we did and read Yashayah, Yirmiyah,
yep.
Malachi, Zechariah?
Nope.
He couldn't even read the Psalms, could he?
No. He was writing them.
That's right. So all he had to read was the Torah. That's all he had. That was Yahweh's word. From your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, I will not depart nor turn away, because you yourself have been my source of instruction and teaching. You have provided the place from which my direction and guidance flow. Misfat Yara. Oh, boy. Misfat. The basis for exercising good judgment, for making sound decisions, for achieving justice, for resolving disputes. From your misfats, I will not depart or turn away. So Dade said, all right, you know, I haven't gone man's way. You know, man promises to lift up the impoverished through entitlements, to make you healthy through nationalized health care, to protect you and keep you safe through the military and the police. That's man's way. Don't say, no, I'm not going there. Never have, never will. But it's Yahweh's means to achieve justice, to resolve disputes, to exercise good judgment. That's what I'm never going to depart from. I'm never going to turn away from. Why? Because you yourself, who? Yahweh, himself, has been Dode's source of instruction and teaching, his source of guidance and direction. That's why Dode is a witness. Yara is an important verb. When Yah first introduces the concept of his Torah, he says that his Torah is based upon the verb Yara. Yara is the basis of Jerusalem. It's Yara Shalem. Shalem is a derivative of Shalom. So Jerusalem is the source from which direction, guidance, teaching and instruction regarding reconciliation, shalom, flows. That's why Jerusalem is so important. By the way, it's interesting, just a bit of a departure here. While Yahweh constantly refers in Yashayah to his love and his mercy for Jerusalem and how he's going to clothe Jerusalem beautifully and raise it up and be a light unto the world. Even more often than he mentions Jerusalem, there's another place that he mentions. You know what that might be? And it's not Mount Moriah. And Yahshua, it's not the Temple Mount. There's a place in Jerusalem that is constantly mentioned throughout Yahshua. You know what that might be? That Yah says, man, if you're here, that's where I'm going to be. You need to know that this is the place that I really love. I'm going to do my best work here. I'm going to return here. I love this place. My light's going to shine here. This is the place where you can meet me. Zion. It's why I constantly say, yeah, I'm not Jewish, but I'm a Zionist. Zion. Zion, of course, is T-S-Y-O-W-N.
Yeah.
And what it means...
Signpost away.
Signpost along the way. You know, it's not just a sign. There are a lot of signs out there. Stop, go, yield. It's not just a sign. It's not just a sign on a post, the upright pillar, the upright one, the one who enables us to stand with him because he stood up for us. It's not just his post. It's not just a sign on the post. It's a sign on the post, on the way. You know, it's God saying, this way. This is my way. Let me, you know, you see a sign that says, okay, you're now entering so and so. You know, you're the next exit is such and such. This is a sign on a post on the way. It tells you that this is the way.
Yahweh exit 3 miles.
Oh. In fact, what's interesting is there is no exit on the way. The way leads directly to Yahweh's house. It's not a dead end, not a cul-de-sac. It's a thoroughfare, and it's a thoroughfare that concludes in Yahweh's house. You don't turn off the right. You don't turn off to the left. You don't go through any circles. There's no serpentine passage. It is an elevated way that goes directly into Yahweh's house. And the reason it's not a dead end is because Yahweh's home is infinite. It's just the...
It just keeps going.
Just keeps right on trucking, man. It's the ultimate superhighway. And we're going to find that there's still lots of signs posted on that way when we get there. The signs aren't signs fun to read when you're traveling? I'd love to read the signs.
Yeah, that's quite the end.
Yeah. But guess who wrote these signs? Yeah, well, signs along the way. And where is the way? Jerusalem. Why? Because Jerusalem is the source from which teaching and guidance regarding reconciliation flows. Everything that Yahweh did of importance was done in Jerusalem. It all leads through Jerusalem. Yeah.
In a way, you could say Jerusalem is just a synonym for Torah.
Yeah,
the place from which teaching and guidance flows.
Yep. Yep, it's a synonym for Torah. That is exactly correct. How palatable is your word to my lips and tongue? More than honey to my mouth. So we've been talking about coming to understand that it's Yahweh's words that he wants us to thoroughly digest. It's Yahweh's words that he wants us to guide our steps so we're separate from the herd. It's Yahweh's words that he wants us to use so we move purposefully in the right direction, going forward. It's Yahweh's words that lead to the truth. That was the whole story. I just finished everything God wanted you to know about what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat. Everything you need to know. Yahweh's words are palatable, agreeable, sweet, pleasant, smooth. to my lips and tongue. His instruction, his imra, his promises, his message. They're sweet. They're nourishing. They're beneficial. Now, he says that they are even sweeter than honey. And I always wondered why Israel was the land of milk and honey. And, you know, it may be Mike, but if it's not Mike, it's someone else. I think it's Mike that came up with the answer for that. You know, milk was easy. Milk, nourishing. Milk, it's the right, perfect form of nourishment to help children grow up in a family. But honey. Do you know that we have found storage containers of honey that were made by the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and the Egyptians that are edible? They haven't spoiled.
Still edible.
Still edible.
I actually hear they're quite tasty.
Absolutely. It is a eternal and natural preservative. Never, never spoiling. So when Yah spoke of it being a land of milk and honey, forever pure, forever kept without being corrupted, it's a food source filled with energy that never goes bad. Honey. Pretty amazing, huh? Yeah, honey speaks of that which is internal because it never, never spoils. From your precepts and those instructions which you have entrusted to us, encouraging us to carefully examine for guidance so that we can respond appropriately to you, Pagudim, I consistently sharpen my capacity to understand. Bien, I make the connections so that, and exercise good judgment so that I understand, become discerning and discriminating. So therefore, I literally and totally hate, I'm completely hostile to every deceptive and misleading path. You know, in Yashaya, there was one statement where Yah says, you know, don't hold back. Shout it out. Tell my people bluntly, boldly, loudly that they have rebelled against me. Tell them they're not listening to me. They need to know. And here's Dode saying, once you come to understand, once you know what Yahweh is offering, not only is it eternally sweet, not only is it satisfying, not only is it palatable, you come to recognize all of the other paths are wrong. You know, and once you understand the Torah and the covenant and Yah's role in the covenant and the eternal nature of the covenant, and that that's Yah's desire, then immediately, well, maybe it was a little slower for me than for others, but that means that a new testament, a new covenant, isn't possible. So you're going to expose and condemn and reject the new covenant, the new testament. Once you come to know that the Torah is God's instruction so that we can come to know him and love him and engage in this covenant relationship with him, you'll come to reject the notion that the Torah is a bunch of laws that are impossible to obey. You know, once you come to know that Yahweh is the Father and that the only thing he cares about is his family, then you'll come to reject the notion of him being a fearsome Lord. Now, it is not enough to simply know. I mean, I'm going to tell you, it's wonderful to know the truth. It's wonderful to share Yah's testimony. It's wonderful to celebrate the sweetness of his word. It is, and that's what we're doing. But Dode is telling us that that's not where it should end. That's not enough. Yes, Dode is constantly telling us, here's how to focus on Yahweh's words. Here's how to come to know him. Here's how to understand what he's offering. This is the whole process. This is marvelous. But that's not enough. What did Doe do with this knowledge? He came to hate. He came to be hostile to every deceptive and misleading path. Folks, it goes hand in hand. Love requires hate. If you do not hate, you cannot love. Once you know the truth, if you're not hostile to the lies, then you're being a jerk. If you've come to embrace the covenant and are part of Yahweh's family and aren't engaged in exposing and condemning the lies that is Christianity and Islam, there's something broken about you. For Dode, coming to know the truth means that he was naturally prone to be hostile to be angry at, to hate that which was misleading. I know this sounds self-serving, but what we do on the Shattering Myths show in terms of exposing and condemning governments, politicians, religious leaders, and military actions and economic malfeasance, once you come to know the truth, you're naturally predisposed to hate that which leads people away from Yahweh, that which causes people to reject or ignore this covenant. That makes sense, James? I mean, you're not naturally a hostile guy. But
no, I'm a pretty laid back and agreeable guy, but it makes sense to me still.
Yeah. You know, I'm not. I've always been aggressive. My whole life I've been aggressive. But I see Yahweh being aggressive. I know Dode was aggressive. He's saying here, I hate it. I'm hostile to it. I despise the misleading paths. If he were alive today, he would be vocal, blunt, condemning Catholicism and Christianity, the Pope, Islam. He would not be a religious leader. He would be a zealot against religion. He wouldn't be rallying to the side of the Israeli defense forces. He'd be condemning them. He says, you know, you don't need weapons. You need the truth. You're relying on the wrong thing. You're saying the wrong things. It's important that we know that to love Yah means that we need to hate those things that lead people away from him. This man, Dode, is a powerful witness for us. He is a marvelous leader. Because what he does is he shares how we can come to know and understand Yah's Torah so that we can participate in his covenant and so that we can ourselves be effective witnesses and leaders. That's the end of our time today, JB. I know we had a number of other people on the line, didn't know who they might be. Typically, if I bring them live, they're more interested in listening, so I did not click on any of those to bring them.
Yeah, live. None of them had the kind of that little with the question, which is supposed to kind of the hand up area.
Yeah,
so
all
I just
of them
kind of left
have,
them on
yeah.
hold.
Yeah, anyone.
Yeah,
in fact, if for all
you
of those.
Press a one, it comes up with that. So.
Yeah. So it gives you the means to say I would like to ask a question, and if you do, we'll try to attend to that. If you'd like to speak, it gives you the ability to say, yeah, I want to speak. And we can make you live. But typically, if we do it for someone who's just listening on the phone, they disconnect and call in again so that they're not live. And I know I did a lot of talking today. What I was hoping is that everything that I had to say was sort of a pale version of Dode, of Yahweh's testimony filtered through one of his creation, one of his children, in such a way that it would be pertinent and resonate in our lives. And if that happened, then it was a wonderful use of an hour and a half.
I think it worked out great. I was just sitting here looking like, wow, the time's already up. It just flew by.
Yeah, we only covered eight statements. The eight statements we covered are statements that the first four we've covered on three previous programs. But it's hard to beat the Ma Water stanza of Dode's love song to the Torah.
It's one of those you can swim in for hours.
Swim in for hours. And it's the, just like cut, where I know this sounds might sound repulsive to some people, but the whole process of cut is that you take the grass and the food source, the grain, if you will, the bread, and you bite into it. You take it into your body. And you chew it, and then you swallow it, and then you let all the digestive juices work on it, and then you lift it up, and you chew on it some more, and you swallow it some more, and you go through that process where no matter how many times you do it, the next time is just as uplifting and nourishing as the last.
Yeah, that was one of the shows. I missed that show, and I'm so glad I went back and listened to it, because I've read through that section several times, and it always caught me. I was like, why does it ascend? I'm like, how does that fit in? And I thought about it and thought about it, and it never occurred to me in those terms, in terms of Yahweh's word being the food and ascending and that whole, the total digestive process. And I'm like, wow, it clicked.
Yeah, it was the ascend is you're literally lifting up that which is nourishing as part of your intake of food. And it has nothing to do with food in the sense of just like the 55th chapter of Yashiyah. He's not talking about food.
Yeah.
He's talking about his word being nourishing.
Yeah, you swallow it, and then eventually you come back to it, you bring it back up, and you start examining it again, and you find something you missed.
Right. And that's the way that it becomes particularly nourishing, and particularly if your feet are all about separation, if you're walking in a way that separates yourself from the herd.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything he has to say is a powerful, exciting, goosebump moment, enlightening. And I am convinced that that just today, like the fin and the scale, is something that he put there knowing that Mike would stumble on it and share it.
Yeah.
And if Mike was the only one that was going to stumble on it and figure it out and share it, that was good enough for Yah. And just as
I was going to say, it's one of those things where, you read it, and my initial reaction reading it was, okay, this is just giving us a good idea of what's healthy, what's unhealthy, and, it's physical benefit. And, I got the symbolic benefit of, be careful what you ingest, and there are things that are bad for you, but then there's all this other level to it that I have never even considered.
Yeah. And, I was willing to go to, here's a list that prior to refrigeration, eating wild boar was unhealthy, and seafood that has neither scales nor fins. You're talking about the old sea roach and clams, and they're filter fish. They're bottom dwellers.
Sure.
Or the catfish doesn't have scales. It's it's a bottom sucker. I said, okay, that's the cleaning system, the filter system for the ocean. That's some good advice. And while I'm not going to discount that, the very fact that there were two of the four animals on the list don't actually exist, never have existed, tells you that you got to be really careful.
There's a little more to this.
Most everything that's worth knowing here, you need to think this through. Think it through. What am I telling you? What advice am I really giving you? And, and maybe you need to wait a while and wait all the way until 750 BCE and I share with Yashaya that it ain't what you eat, stupid. You can be nourished by my word. That's what you ought to, that's what you ought to be nourished by. It's just great stuff. All right, well, JB, I enjoyed doing this with you. Thank you for letting me ask you these questions, and more fun to do it that way. And it's nice to do it without having to focus on our idiot president, our belligerent country.
I'm listening to Shattering Myths and Archives, so I don't know exactly what went on recently.
Oh, today the President of the United States went on to say that it was Russian-backed separatists that fired the missile. Now, I'm here to tell you that the high likelihood is that it was ethnic Russians who were trying to defend themselves against the Ukrainian military that probably shot the missile, thinking that it was Ukrainian jet coming to bomb them. And they feel great remorse that it was a commercial aircraft. But they're not Russian-backed. There's no evidence that Russian is providing them with anything. They're not Russian-backed.
I mean, we can cast aspersions in that direction. It benefits us, so.
So the labels, the rhetoric we use is highly inflammatory, incendiary. You know, words are powerful tools, and we have a president that is extraordinarily inflammatory with his words. And they're using it. Well, you can hear that I have a canine here, a four-footed friend, that has decided that it is past her dinner time because this is now 10 minutes past her dinner time, and she's giving me an earful. If you loved me, you'd feed me.
She's letting you know.
Yeah, you're talking about this food stuff. And now it's time to feed me. Okay. I'm going to go take care of my dog.
I may not know a lot of this English, not what food means.
Yeah. Oh, she knows food. Yeah. Time for her to eat. She can also tell time. And so she just gives me an earful. She just starts talking to me, gives me the nose, looks at me, and then starts chit-chatting, telling me, okay, it's time to.
And it's that look that makes you feel so bad for not giving them what they want.
We do nourish those we love. Yahweh loves us. He nourishes us.
Yep.
All right, JB. My pleasure to do this way. I look forward to being with you next Friday.
All right. Actually, next Friday I won't be able to make it here.
All right. Well, I'll be here. Look forward to being with
you
the next time.
I have a baby shower for my little sister, so.
Okay. Well, yeah, family first.
Yep.
Enjoy.
I'll see you after that.
Bye-bye.
Bye.